This is episode 37 of the Microsoft Cloud Show. We're going to talk about the latest news around the cloud and Azure, AWS, and Office 365, recorded live July the 2nd, 2014. Welcome to the Microsoft Cloud Show, the only place to stay up to date on everything going on in the Microsoft Cloud world, including Windows Azure, Office 365, SharePoint, Exchange, Link, and related technologies. Just the information, no marketing, no BS. I'm Andrew Connell.
And I'm Chris Johnson.
And we're just two dudes telling you how we see it. Here we are with episode 37. How are you doing, my friend?
Very well, sir. Very well. How about yourself?
Doing good. It has been, 3 weeks since we've done one of these together. I did a solo show and then you did a solo show.
Yeah, I gotta say, talking to myself was weird, man. It's great to have you back.
Likewise, man. It's great to be back in the States and on solid, recording on solid ground, not moving ground.
Yeah, you're used to having to try to sort of fat finger a keyboard on a bus, right?
Man, I tell you, it was tricky. I just finished the SharePoint Evolutions Conference Roadshow, where they were 3 weeks, went through all these cities in England and Scotland and Ireland, and used a tour bus. And when I say a tour bus, I mean like rock star style tour bus, to where I believe the bus that we were on the week after we used it was picking up a popular artist to do her roadshow. I think it was the artist Keisha. I'm not 100%.
What?
But yeah, it was crazy. Full bar, bathroom. That the joke was, how many people can we fit in it?
Yeah, it looked pretty small from the photos of the bathroom that you posted on Facebook.
It was most certainly not made for a 6'2" American.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, you know, I hope you guys rock starred it before you passed it on.
we had a fabulous time. It was. I will say it was quite a grind. You would start the day at 9 o'clock, completely checked out of the hotel, and you'd have to go take your stuff to the speaker room. You would do a session throughout the day. About 4:45 in the afternoon, there would be a reception with small food and giveaways from the sponsors to the attendees, and beverages where you'd mix and mingle with them.
Yeah.
6 o'clock, we'd load the bus. After that, we'd all go to dinner. And about 2 hours after that, somewhere around 8 to 9 o'clock, the bus would pick us up and we would drive to the next city, check into the hotel anywhere from, I'd say, 11:30 until, I think one night I did it, we checked in around 1:30 in the morning. So 11:30 p.m. to 1:30 in the morning, get up the next day, do it again. So
that is brutal. But it sounds like the rock star lifestyle. So
it was a great experience. I did Newcastle, England, Edinburgh, Scotland, Aberdeen, Scotland, Belfast, Ireland, and Dublin, Ireland. And I came home more tired than when I left, but it was a lot of fun.
Awesome. So, that sounds great.
How have you been? What have you been up to?
Oh, boy. It's been a big couple of weeks with you gone.
Did you break something?
No, I didn't break anything. We're thinking about moving. I may have mentioned that on the show before. Just nothing major, just selling our house and moving. So we've got that on the market and having to go through all the shenanigans of that. I was the on-call person from our group for Office 365. In fact, I am still the on-call person for Office 365, one of the on-call people. It's a group of people that we have different representatives from different groups, like, you know, obviously from engineering and the folks that run the data centers and the networking teams and all that, and from the technical marketing team, I'm the on-call person. And last week, we had a couple of incidents, one with Link and one with Exchange. So that was a bit of a baptism by fire for my first serious incident that happened. So you know, we work with our field and just making sure they're up to date with what's going on and where we're at with rectifying the problem. We work with engineering on how they're doing and fixing the problem, and then we make sure all the comms and all that sort of stuff run smoothly. So it was an experience. Let me just say that.
Yeah, you went a little silent on the all of our I guess I wouldn't say it's not work related, but I guess, you know, outside of work
stuff.
You went a bit silent on the email for a couple days.
Yeah, it sort of backed up in my inbox while we were dealing with the with 2 days, and it was kind of that both one was a link incident and one was an exchange incident, and they were completely unrelated, but they just so happened to be back to back days, which really just, you know, made things extra special. That was fun and exciting, but I hope it never happens again.
Oh, you got a new toy recently, didn't you?
I did. I got a Surface Pro 3. It's one of the i5 models. The i7 models don't come out until August, I believe. So it's an i5, I think 8 GB of RAM and 256 GB drive SSD or something. And I got to say, like, I have an original Surface RT. I used to have a Surface Pro, and now I've got the was it a Surface Pro 2 that I had? Yeah, I think it was Surface Pro 2. And now I'm on the Surface Pro 3, and I'm using it as my sort of my portable machine. So I've got a machine that I just leave sitting at my desk at work, and then this I take with me to meetings, and I'm going to travel with it as my primary machine and all that. And, you know, definitely in terms of each step of the Surface Pro series, it's a hell of a lot bigger step than it was from a Surface Pro 1 to a Surface Pro 2, I think, in terms of performance and improvements and styling. And, you know, it's super thin. Like, I just don't know how they do it. I've got no idea. It's just ridiculously thin. And to be honest, like, the killer for me is the Surface Pro 2 screen was slightly too small for me to make it my primary machine. Whereas the Surface Pro 3 I can actually use as a proper laptop replacement.
That's cool.
But, you know, it doesn't have a fixed hinge, right? So it's got the floppy keyboard type thing.
Mm-hmm.
So if that's not for you, you know, it's a tough one. But it's working out okay for me. And I love the endless positioned hinge, right? Mm. There's a hinge on the back, you know, a stand that you could stand the thing up with. And it's just got this sort of massive range of motion. And it's kind of kind of quirky because you pull it out to begin with, and it's quite stiff, and you're not sure you're doing it right. And so the first time you do it, I swear I was going to pull the thing off. Like, it didn't feel quite right, you know, like it felt a bit too stiff, but it's loosening up. It has loosened up a little bit, which, maybe it's that I've loosened up and I'm just pulling it harder.
feel a little, not so delicate with you, or feel a little more comfortable.
Right, right. Anyway, it's a great machine. I highly recommend it. It's and I'm not trying to say that just because I work at Microsoft either. I think it's genuinely a big improvement over the last one.
Yeah, I'm curious to check it out. I'm in the market to figure out a new machine for my son. So my wife has a Carbon Touch. Lenovo Carbon Touch, and she's now playing with an old MacBook Air that I had before I got my MacBook Pro to see if she wants to switch over to it. And if she does, then we hand it down. Otherwise, I may be trading in the Air to the Microsoft Store to get a Surface 2 Pro or a Surface 3 Pro to see. But cool. Definitely want to check it out. But
cool,
that's interesting. Hey, I ran into I have the flat spot on my head syndrome in the last 2 weeks, where I have run into two things that our SharePoint listeners may be interested to hear. One is that I found that in the latest update for the developer tools for Visual Studio, for the Office developer tools for Visual Studio, if you the workflow designer stuff and activities, the references changed in the project. So if you had created a project that had used workflow from, or that had a workflow in it from, let's say early 2014 or sometime in 2013, and then you tried to open that after you updated the tools, you'd get a lot of activity errors and designer errors, and it wouldn't deploy. But if you created a brand new one after you had upgraded the tools, everything worked just fine. So what happened is that the references in the project file changed, and it wasn't just the file. It wasn't just like the version numbers changed. We're talking like full on assembly names changed. and it was really nasty stuff. So I'll put it in the show notes. I have a blog post. I went through and I found a way that you can go through and you can update it. It's not as intuitive or easy to change as or that's the issue, because in a traditional Visual Studio project, you have that references node. And you can see the little construction signs right next to the references and issue.
Yeah.
But there's no references node that shows up in an app project. So you don't see that there's a bad reference.
Interesting.
And then another one I found, and this one's a nasty little one, is that for those people working with the SharePoint REST API, if you can put, like, in the accept header, you can put multiple things in the accept header when you make a request. And when you do that, you separate them by semicolons. The way I've always done it is to throw a semicolon on the very last one. So I do like application/json:odata=verbose. And then I put a semicolon on the end of it. That worked just fine. But with Service Pack 1 on SharePoint 2013, it introduced something that said, can't have that trailing semicolon, and you would get a HTTP status response of 400 bad requests. Sometime after Service Pack 1, there was a cumulative update that released that, I don't want to say fixed it, but went back to the more permissive accept handler, where you could put a trailing semicolon on it. And technically, the trailing semicolon is not part of the spec, the OData spec or the REST spec. The OData spec. There is no such thing as a REST spec. But SharePoint was forgiving, and I found that with Service Pack 1, it was not forgiving, and then they came back to being more forgiving. So just two little things, and I'll put...
Yeah, something to watch out for sure. Yeah,
definitely, it was the old... I found both of them from people reporting issues in my Pluralsight courses, and so it was all of a sudden you started getting all these issues coming in, and you're like, what the hell? Nothing changed.
Hey, here's a fascinating fact. Well, not a fact. Here's a fascinating little tidbit I'll just throw out there and see which of our astute listeners catch on to this and bring it up. But we recently released support for JSON Lite responses from our REST services as well. So we're gonna put a post out about that soon. But maybe I shouldn't have said anything.
No. That's very cool. Because I heard that you did that. I heard that was part of SP1, Visual Studio SharePoint 2013 SP1.
Not sure exactly what it shipped with, but it was a little while ago. But we're gonna put some information out about it.
Oh, cool. Well, the stuff that I've done with Breeze and the REST API, we're looking to update that so that we have we can support using the smaller payloads too. So
nice.
Yeah. Well, hey. So enough of our little banter here. Got a little bit of a podcast update on some stuff. Went through and ran some metrics and checking out. We actually got a brand new 5-star review 2 weeks ago.
Woohoo!
Yeah, so this is pretty cool. I opened it up and it's by someone named T101CHM. He says, just two dudes with a great podcast. AC and CJ are two very well-respected guys in the Microsoft world. Go to any Microsoft conference and these two guys are everywhere. Well, you won't find me at a SQL Server conference, but that's okay. always engaging to listen to, and you're guaranteed to learn something in their sessions. This podcast is just a logical extension of these guys sharing the experience. Love the format, and they summarize all the cloud news, not just Microsoft's. Appreciate these guys are open and honest. Ha, he hasn't met you yet. I'm just kidding.
Hey, don't give the game away.
And not touting the Microsoft corporate line. Thanks for keeping... I'm just messing with you. We're pretty good here. Thanks for keeping us up to date so we can do our day jobs. And then he threw something in here. He said, for your Ask Us Anything question.
Ooh. You
ready? This is a good one. We had one planned and I saw this one and I was like, oh, we got to do this instead.
Are we actually ready for this question?
Are you ready?
Is it safe for our under 18 listeners?
Totally.
Well, okay.
I don't know. It depends on what your answer is. If SharePoint never existed, what would you be doing today?
Oh, yes. Well, okay. So my prior profession, I won't get into that. Just
you got rid of the costumes, huh?
Yeah, exactly. The tassels. I think, gosh, what would I be doing today? I'd definitely be still in the IT industry. I was before I got into SharePoint, so I think I would still be in it. I would probably be, I would say I'd probably still be doing a lot more hardcore dev than I am today, I think. Like, and I don't mean that in a really bad, because SharePoint made me a non-coder kind of way. I mean that before I got into SharePoint, I was doing a lot of C++ development, and C# was just really coming out, like original .NET version before I left the UK. And so I was leading a dev team there and building software products. But then when I came to Microsoft and got into SharePoint, I went into much more consulting, right? So it was a lot less hands-on coding over time, and a lot less than every single day. I was still coding quite a bit. But I think I'd still be running a dev team and building software. I enjoy it. Like that's a passion of mine. So
I've got to start getting you to read these questions, because this is now going to be the second or third time where your answer is identical to what mine was going to be. you always steal my answer.
I'm stealing your thunder, man. Well, you've got to make something up. Like maybe you'd be some sort of ballroom dancer or something, AC.
I don't think so. I don't even have two left feet. I have no feet. I was going to say that, you know, this is always a hard question, because, you know, SharePoint didn't exist. I'm with you. I would have definitely still been in the tech space. And specifically, I would have been maybe more on the bespoke development kind of side, more on the custom dev side, because that's where I was before I got into SharePoint. I was actually more in the content management server or CMS, web-based CMS type things than before I jumped into SharePoint. But
I sort of bundled all that together.
Yeah. And I think that where things are today, because I have a genuine interest in this, and I think it's where the future's going, but I would probably today be doing a significant amount more development and more work around the PaaS side, the platform as a service type stuff, building things that are designed to run only in the cloud, using cloud-based services, not virtual machines and that kind of stuff. I love that side of it. Either doing that, or I was involved in a startup at the time that was around the biotech space that was kind of financially having issues, and had the money kind of been a little bit more stable and SharePoint wasn't around at that time that I started kind of moving into, I probably would have been full bore on that. That was my, at the time, so far, that was my, I could be 25 driving a Ferrari kind of shot. So it was we had a killer freaking thing we were doing, but
nice.
It didn't happen. So
yeah, I don't know if I'd be working at Microsoft if I stayed stuck in just in development. I may not have ever moved to the States. So who knows where these things take you, right? It's a set of sliding doors.
Yeah, definitely. So hey, one more little thing about the podcast here. I did go through and I looked at our stats, and then we can move on to what we're going to talk about in the show, which is really a big news update around cloud news and a little bit of 365 news. I looked at our metrics. We have all of our shows are stored in Azure Blobs, and we have logging turned on. So I went and looked at it, and just for anybody's interest, we started recording or publishing these shows in September of 2013. So all the way up through June of 2014. So what is that? 9 months about 9 months or so.
Yeah. Yeah.
We have had 56,000 downloads of our episodes.
Wow.
And that's just the episodes. It doesn't include anything else. Just MP3s. And we're averaging about 1600 downloads per show. And that does not include episode 36, which came out very recently. I didn't think that was fair. So that's from the very first show all the way up. And I tell you, you know, I was looking at the most popular shows, and some of them are, there's two that are far and above the most popular. And that was our show number 11, where we did our 2014 predictions.
Oh yeah.
And then show number 15, where I think I kind of went off the handle talking about OneDrive as the new SkyDrive and the naming stuff.
Nice.
But not
bad. 1600 per show. That's pretty good, I think, considering how good some of them have been and how bad some of them have been.
I know.
That's an average, right? So that's good.
We got to get more bloopers at the beginning of the show. I love doing little Easter eggs at the beginning of the show.
Yeah, that's funny.
I love doing them and you not knowing they're coming, and then I throw them in there and I just get this text, this random text late at night, like, oh my god, that was.
Yeah, that's funny.
So
cool. Yeah.
But so you want to jump into the news? About the news we got?
Yeah, sounds good. So we've got a mixture of some good Azure news and some good Office 365 news, and some AWS news too. Why don't I pick one? I'll pick an Office 365 one if that's all right, because it's kind of near and dear to my heart.
Go for it.
All right. So OpenXML SDK goes open source. So for those who don't know, OpenXML is the document format that, you know, DocX and PPTX and so forth for the Office file formats. And the standard or the format has been an open thing for quite some time. So it's all documented and it's standardized and so forth, and you can go read the docs and put one of those documents together. However, the software development kit, the SDK that helps developers put together and manipulate those documents from code that Microsoft put out, wasn't open sourced until I think last week, or maybe the week before it was. Mm. Last week. So there's a blog up on blogs.office.com that we'll link to off in the show notes. This is kind of cool. It means that companies can go take a look at the SDK source, add new features to it if they want, submit bug fixes, do pull requests. It's all up on GitHub. So you can participate in making the SDK better or contributing things to it that you think are missing.
Mm, that's very cool. I'm curious. I was gonna be a little jaded there, but I probably shouldn't do that because I was curious because I know that I haven't seen much in the way of updates around the SDK in a while, and I'm wondering if this is just part of the push to go open and then to see, you know, anybody kind of wants to, you know, help us do updates to it, see where we want to go. You know, it's a good move. I'm very happy to see that they've gone open source. I'd be curious to see where customers try and take it now. So
yeah, and it's funny because I've heard it even just since the news came out, a couple of comments of, hey, I've wanted you to add these features for, you know, a year or something, and now I get to go do it.
Yeah, so it'd be cool. It'd be very cool to see where people put it.
Yeah.
So I'll throw a, I'm going to pivot a bit and I'm going to switch over to Azure and talk about something new that they've added, or I guess a renaming here. And this is the Azure, it's called Azure Site Recovery or ASR. And what this is, it was renamed from another product and I just blanked on the name. Disaster Recovery, I think is what they called it.
Hmm.
But basically what it is that you can take, let's say you have VMs that are running in Hyper-V on-prem. You can use System Center to have these VMs be able to have like a hot failover to another on-prem data center or server, so that you can have VMs that have, you know, some resiliency to them. So you've got like the shadow kind of copies that are going on and shadow writes that are happening from your primary over to the secondary. And if the primary fails, you can swap over to the secondary. What this new thing is that now you can make that secondary be Azure VMs. And these VMs are hosted by Azure. So you could be having your on-prem VMs that are running nice and, you know, quick and stuff on your on-prem environment. And if things fail, you can have it fail over to VMs that are running up in Azure. And they may not be running nearly as fast as what you have on-prem, because I know there's limits on terms of the number of IOPS that you can have in Azure. And you're also going to be going across the WAN, maybe through a VPN. But that's a killer kind of a scale disaster recovery or recovery option that Azure has added for customers that are using Hyper-V VMs.
Yeah, nice. Yeah. Okay, so switching over to some AWS news, I guess, from Azure to AWS. AWS EC2 has come out with what they're calling low-cost burstable instances, which are a new type of instance size for virtual machines. Extremely low cost. I think the starting prices are starting at 0.013 of a dollar. Right? So what do you even call that?
It's 1.3 cents,
I guess. It's like, yeah, it's, wow. I mean, It's a penny and a bit, yeah. Which comes out at $9.50 a month. And these are quite low powered instances as well. So you don't get you know the full noise of a fully powered virtual machine. However, you do get the ability to burst from time to time. And I think, and correct me if I'm wrong of your understanding of this, AC, but the way I understood it, or the way I read it, was that if you go for a little while and you're cooking along at, you know, at low speed, you start building up these sort of CPU credits that you can then spend on a burst period to crank up your power and handle peak demand. Is that how you understood it?
Yeah, so it's the only thing I would correct you is that it's not. I wouldn't say they're low powered VMs because they're standard VMs, but essentially what it is you're kind of in a different pricing model. We'll have a link to the announcement on the show notes, and there's some good graphs if you scroll down on the on their blog post that kind of shows you what's going on. But essentially, if you let's say you do it, it's called the T2 instances, or what these low powered burstable images are. The small one has one CPU and it's called, they say it's got a baseline performance of 20% and the price or in credits, CPU credits of 12 per hour. So basically the way it works is that as long as the VM that you're on stays below 20% CPU utilization, you will accumulate 12 CPU credits per hour. And these are only good for 24 hours. So it's a kind of a rolling. It's not like a, you know.
Yeah, you can't bank them forever.
Right. Yeah, you bank them for 24 hours. And all of a sudden, if the VM that you're on needs to spike, it can spike up to 100% and start consuming those credits. So it's great for if you're doing like virtual desktops when everyone logs in the morning. It's great for build servers. Stuff like that where you want the machines always on and always available. You don't want to have to spin them up, but they're just kind of hanging around until all of a sudden we got a boatload of work we got to do and we process and then we go back to sleep. Or we kind of
I guess I should have really said that they're for tasks that are on average need a low amount of juice, right?
Yeah.
But need to burst up periodically and consume your credits. That's kind of an interesting pricing model. It's going to be interesting to see how people figure out whether one of these things is right for them and how much one of these things will sort of ultimately end up costing you.
Yeah. Yeah. The guy that did the blog on it does a good analogy saying that it's kind of like my car. My car can go up to 150 miles an hour. But I don't normally go 150 miles an hour, and my car is not designed to drive for 150 miles an hour for 5 hours or whatever.
Hey, you should just get a Leaf, and they only do 95 miles an hour, and you can't ever go above 95 miles an hour.
Does a Leaf have like a little? Does a floorboard open where you can run at the same time? Like a little Flintstone kind of thing?
No, it's got some pedals in there for recharging the battery. Classic. Nice. So that's some interesting new pricing movement from AWS. I think that's really fascinating because they're trying to sort of shake up the way things are priced, as opposed to just being like, you know, X amount of money, X amount of memory, X amount of CPU. So they're trying to introduce a new model. That's cool.
So we'll pivot back from Azure that was AWS, and let's do an Office 365 bit. So we have a new podcast that your team has started, I understand. Jeremy Thake is the host of the Office 365 Developer Podcast.
Yeah. He has started that up, and it's being posted up to the blogs.office.com/dev is where you can find those.
Yeah. So that's, and I know Jeremy's done, it seems like it's mostly an interview style. At least that's what my perception is so far. It's part people on that work for Microsoft and then also community stuff. Because I saw I think it was the first episode he interviewed you and Sonia Koptev.
Yeah.
And then some,
I think, his goals on this is just to open up a little bit more and share some of the stories and insights with various people that work on 365 and particularly in the developer space. It doesn't mean, I think he's also talking to folks from outside the company too, but it's just a vehicle, I think, for getting the word out and being a little more open.
Yeah. So I think that'll be an interest. That'll be of interest to those who are in 365, who are our 365 based listeners of this podcast. That one might also be interesting to you as well. So definitely go check them out.
Yeah, and definitely for developers, it's squarely targeted in the dev audience.
Yep.
Excellent. So what do we switch back to now? Let's go talk to some more Azure news, shall we?
Sure.
So HD Insight, we'll need to tag team on this because this is one of my kind of low knowledge subject areas. But HD Insight, which is the Azure version of Hadoop in the Azure cloud, can now point at your blobs and suck in information. Is that correct?
Yeah. So HD Insight, like you said, it's Hadoop is really good for looking at unstructured data. Before, you know, you'd have to go through and set up some big data warehouse to make data much more structured so that you could build cubes and that kind of stuff to analyze it.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that you can do is that there's a white paper that we'll link to in the show notes, and it talks about using HD Insight to point it to the logs for the Azure storage blob or queues or tables, which is very flat, very unstructured data. You can use HD Insight to point it to those logs, ingest all that information, and be able to create some sort of insights and be able to get some analytics and stuff on that data, stuff that is not very easy to do otherwise. Like right now, a great example is the some of the stats I was giving about the podcast earlier. Every month I have a little console app that I run that sucks out the log files from our Azure Blob Store. I then stick it into an Excel spreadsheet and use Power Pivot to see, like, do the roll-ups and see, you know, what user agents are hitting our blog, how many people are coming through iTunes, how many people are coming on Windows phones, how many people are coming through Stitcher,
yeah,
and all those kinds of things, and be able to get more insights into them.
Gotcha. This would also be good for big log files, right? Like maybe somebody wants to go point a SharePoint ULS log and suck it all in and do things with it, for example, or web applications in the cloud, and you sort of bulk log off to table storage and then suck that all out and into HD Insight or something.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really cool. It's got some really cool improvements there.
Nice.
Let's see, what else do we have? We have two more Office 365 ones I want you to talk a little bit more about because I think you've got a little bit more insight into them. But look, one or two that I'll throw in here that are really, really quick Azure ones is that now Azure supports running SAP applications on Azure. So one of the really big painful things when you deal with SAP is standing up and deploying SAP. And now there are VMs set up to where now you can just spin it up. SAP is all configured. You're good to go. Now, granted, there's going to be a lot more work that you have to do around it. But one of the big pain points of standing it up and scaling it is all taken care of for you. So there's a whole thing around supporting SAP-based applications. Mm. And the Azure team has also launched a much improved Azure status dashboard for all the different data centers and regions and all the services that are offered, and to find out what's going on and the status of those. That's at status.azure.com.
Yeah, it looks nice. It's very clean and very easy to understand. Yeah, that looks really good.
Mm, yep.
So finishing off on some 365 news. Two items. The Office 365 roadmap went live, which is a new piece of office.com where you can go and see a set of things like features and things that are coming down the pike from the Office 365 team, whether they're in development or being rolled out or have been cancelled. So again, this is all about trying to make it a little bit more visible about what's coming and what we're working on and when you'll see it rolling into your tenants.
Yeah, this is very welcome. This has been much needed, and it's very, very welcome to see this.
Yeah, this was, we heard this a lot of people just wanting more visibility into what's coming and things like that. So that will definitely develop. Like the first version of that or the first release of that came out recently, but we have a process internally for updating that and bringing out as new things come on our roadmap and things like that. It's also worth pointing out that, and it's pointed out in the blog, but it's not really pointed out on the roadmap page, that roadmap really only looks out, you know, a few months out in advance, not a year out in advance type thing. And so if there's a feature that you think like, oh my goodness, how on earth can they possibly have not gotten to this? Then it's quite possible that we are going to get to it. It's just not yet on the roadmap that we publish, because it's going to take a longer period of time for us to get it out. So yeah, like I said, it only looks out a few months, which to some will cause a little bit of confusion in that, like, how come my pet feature ABC, which I've talked to the team about, and I know that they're thinking about, why isn't it on the roadmap? And that's typically why we want to make sure what goes on the roadmap is, you know, very certain to actually make it to the service and be built. So
yeah, it's very nice to see that. Although
there's some dev things in there too that will be interesting to developers amongst everything else. So it's not just dev stuff. It's end user stuff and it's IT pro stuff too. It's a whole mixture in there.
Very cool.
Mm.
So I got another bit of our last Azure bit of news. This one, the developers, the web devs especially, are going to love this. This is one of those things that once you see it, you're kind of like, well, duh, why hasn't somebody done this before? So as a web developer, we use CSS, we use JavaScript. We always want to minify those things. We want to go through and make those files as small as we possibly can by stripping out all the white space and even rewriting some of it to use, like, shorten the variable names and that kind of stuff. Same thing with images, where you can take images and stitch them together and make it more like use sprites, in a sense, to show these images.
Yeah.
This has always been something you've had to do to your application yourself and then push everything up into production. There is now two new NuGet packages, and one's called the Azure Image Optimizer and one's called the Azure Minifier. And what you can do is that if you have a web application that you're deploying to an Azure website, if you install these two packages inside of your web project, and this is into the source, not into the website, if Azure Websites sees these things referenced inside of your project, it will automatically do all the minification and image optimization for you in production on Azure. You don't have to do anything to your code. They do it all on the server side for you. That is freaking awesome. I can't wait to start taking advantage of that.
Yeah, because it is a bit of an art, right? It's to get it right and to continually be doing it as you build out your apps and sites and so forth. So this will really help.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and we'll have a link to a blog post by Mads Christensen, who's on the ASP.NET team, the Visual Studio team, that talks about this. There's a good YouTube video, about 3 minutes and 44 seconds, that does a good job of demonstrating what this is all about. So it's way cool. Very cool stuff.
Nice. Nice. Yeah, I suck at that stuff, so I'll definitely be using that. Office 365 news. Let's just finish up on that. 1 terabyte for OneDrive for Business. So a little while back, there was some news about OneDrive for Business expanding to 1 terabyte of storage. That was back in April for Office 365 Business customers. And then just this past week, I think it was, back on the 23rd, it was announced that also the 1 terabyte limit would, or the increase to 1 terabyte would also be coming for 365 home users, 365 personal, and 365 university users. And so, like, to give you an example, Office 365 personal, that is a Office 365 SKU or version, if you will, that's aimed at a single person being personal. Mm. You get a copy of Office, you know, it gets streamed down from Office 365 to your desktop computer and so forth. And you can use it on your iPad, for example, too, to log into Office on the iPad. And so now you get 1 terabyte of OneDrive for Business storage along with that, which is pretty sweet.
Is that available now, or is that available soon?
So the change was announced, but I believe it rolls out as opposed to being available today. Not 100% sure on that.
Okay. That was, that part was a little confusing to me. I was looking for it, like, where's mine? And then, you know, it got me thinking. You know, I saw that Google did the same thing with Google Drive. They said, yeah, you get, you know, for I think $10, you can get 1 terabyte. Microsoft one upped them and said, nope, you get it for free now, 1 terabyte. I can't imagine putting that much stuff, getting that much stuff to the cloud. And then I can imagine, like, whenever I hear this, the first thing I think of is, let me pop open a new laptop and let me go through and install it and say, sync. And it's like, there goes my hard drive.
But so my take on this is I don't think it's that you can. Sorry, I don't think it's that you need it.
Yeah.
It's just one of those things that you don't ever have to worry about.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like salary and earning money. So long as you're paid a little bit more than you need to stop worrying about it, mm-hmm. it'll just be off your mind. But if you get paid just a little bit less than what will cause you to worry, then it'll always be on your mind. It'll always be a problem.
Yeah.
And I sort of see it the same way. It's right. Let's just up the limits so that people don't have to worry about it.
Yeah. It's like 1 terabyte is almost like saying unlimited. It's just that we got to have a little bit of a cap there just in case.
Yeah. Well, interestingly enough, Google came out with Drive for Work or whatever it was called, and announced unlimited storage.
Oh, did they really? Huh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
So try to download unlimited to your laptop.
Somehow my ripped DVDs don't really fit.
You know, they came out with unlimited and I was like, wow, that's interesting. I wonder if anybody's going to test that and sit there uploading like terabyte files just through a PowerShell script or something.
We need like Anonymous to go through and just start loading a bunch of data to start sending it from all these different bots and let's just see what happens.
Yeah, who knows? So now it's 365 business customers as well as 365 home, 365 personal, and 365 Office 365 university SKUs. Mm. They used to have 20 gig storage. Now it's gone up to 1 terabyte.
Mm. Very cool.
So apparently, according to the blog post that we'll also link to off in the show notes, 1 terabyte can store about 1,000 copies of the full edition of Encyclopedia Britannica. 2,000 hours of Chris and AC at high quality. High quality audio.
Something tells me there's going to be a few things on Pirate Bay pointing over to this new Google storage.
I suspect so. Yeah.
Cool. All righty.
Excellent. Good wrap up. Yeah.
Yep. That's all of our news that all of our news that we've collected. So we're back on track. Got a few more show episodes. Ideas that we'll be recording over the next few weeks and just keep plugging away through the summer.
Yeah, it's great to have you back on the show and I've missed you the last couple of weeks, AC, I've got to say. It's glad to have you back in the office and on the show recording. And we've gone a little long with this one, but I hope people don't mind.
Yeah, it'll be good. They'll all stick around.
Right on.
At least I hope so. All right, thanks everybody. We will see you next week.
Cheers.
If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text, or record it as a WAV or an MP3 file, and provide a link so that we can play your question on the show. You can subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for the Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find a full transcript and show notes of each episode. You can find us on Facebook searching for the Microsoft Cloud Show, or on Twitter at MS Cloud Show. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.